They overwhelm you with their work. They overwhelm you with pressure.
Should they score?
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We put the Crosby score.
Give them 20 minutes of room where they can make you bleed for it, and we did.
If he doesn't sign for Winnipeg Jets in the next couple of weeks, no player will be more coveted.
Dustin Byfuglien posted it in. It's a rocket of a shot.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Now Drew Stafford will have to score for the shootout to continue, otherwise Detroit will win the hockey game. Stafford will pick it up, skip steps towards center, swings across the line to the near side, right-handed shot, moves in, gathers speed, shoots it, it's stopped by Mrazek. And the Red Wings win the hockey game in a shootout. Detroit comes back from a 3-1 deficit and beats Winnipeg here tonight.
That call from Paulie Edmonds last night as the Winnipeg Jets drop a 4-3 decision to the Detroit Red Wings. They lose the shootout by a 2-1 margin. They blow a 3-1 first period lead. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at tsn1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. We, of course, start with last night's Jets-Red Wings game. A disappointing result, I would suggest, for the Winnipeg Jets. Sean, Ezzy, good evening to you both. Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg, gentlemen, good to see you both. I would say a disappointing result for the Winnipeg Jets in that they get the 1 point, which you need. You always need those, you know, losses that aren't in regulation. But this was a game the Jets had a firm control of after 20 minutes. Could argue that they played to some of the best, one of the best periods of their season in that first period, and then the second and third periods were certainly disappointing to the Winnipeg Jets and to the assembled masses last night at MTS Center.
Yeah, Drew, it was a great first period, and at one point in that game, it looked like the Jets were going to maybe score 6 or 7 or even 9 goals with 3 goals in that first period with Patrick Laine bouncing pucks off of defenseman faces. So it was certainly a very good first period, and you know, after that first Jets goal, the Detroit Red Wings scored right after, and you kind of didn't like to see that. But certainly the way the Jets were moving the puck, the way they were using their speed was very impressive. And in that second period, maybe 5 to 10 minutes into that second period, you kind of felt that lull, and the Jets let the Red Wings back into it. And that's what happens when you don't play with speed and you turn the puck over. Tobias Enstrom turns the puck over, and it results in a Detroit goal. So, I mean, it was a pretty even game after 60 minutes, certainly not after the first 20 minutes, but I mean, you still get a point, and sure, you lose in the shootout, but the Jets could have easily won in overtime. Brian Little, you know, it looked like he was going to score on that breakaway there. So certainly, you know, not a disappointing game from the Jets' standpoint, but a disappointing last 30 minutes of that game. And, you know, Paul Maurice talked about the legs and how the team looked tired. But, I mean, you got to close out that game. And, you know, if you're looking at this glass half full, Drew, the Jets have got points in 5 of their last 6 games, 4-1-1. Mm-hmm. But you can't be happy with the way that they finished because, as you said, in that first period, they were playing very smart, aggressive, you know, type of hockey that they've been playing over the last week, week and a half. But they let up. And, you know, the Red Wings, even though the Red Wings might not be the dominant team that they were 7 or 8 years ago, you know, they have guys that can put the puck in the net. Anthony Mantha, you know, good young player. Dylan Larkin, one of the fastest guys in the league. Henrik Zetterberg might be in his mid-30s, but he's still playing very well. And you saw his move in the shootout. So, you know, again, I wouldn't, you know, extrapolate too much out of this game because I thought that the Jets were pretty good for the most part, and that third period was pretty boring and disappointing. But, you know, you got a rebound because you have a really good New York Rangers team coming in tomorrow night.
Yeah, banged up New York Rangers team, which we'll address coming up next segment, and we'll be joined by Rangers radio analyst Dave Maloney coming up at the bottom of the hour. But Sean, from your perspective, that was a game for the taking. The Detroit Red Wings are, I'm expecting their playoff streak to end this season. I don't think they're not a dominant team by any stretch of the imagination. You're down 3-1 after 20 minutes. The Jets just needed to keep skating, and I think that game would have been there for them. Really, I thought the last two periods, for the most part, were controlled by the Red Wings, and they were full marks. They fully deserved the win that they ended up getting in the shootout.
Yeah, they pressured the Jets heavily as that game went on, and like you were talking about, Drew, the Jets just having trouble moving their feet quicker than the Red Wings, and Paul Maurice said post-game, he said that, "I noticed a handful of guys that could have moved their feet a little faster." So something stood out to Paul Maurice in that game about the effort level of the Jets. I think the dreaded second period came back once again to haunt them. And I think that kind of, I think we're starting to see that might take the an effect on the Jets mentally, because they didn't register a shot till about 10 minutes into the third period. So you have to think that this is starting to weigh on them emotionally and mentally, that once again, we've let this other team crawl back into it in the second period, and now we have to recover in the third, and they got the pressure of the home crowd, and It was a tough one to watch as that game wore on. Then we get to overtime. Nikolaj Ehlers had a few chances to end the game as well. Can we just talk about that first play, though, with Patrick Laine, Nikolaj Ehlers, and Brian Little, where Laine drops it in between his legs. Ehlers, the crisp pass to Brian Little, and Brian Little narrowly buries it for, well, doesn't, but it was a great opportunity. And you see the skill, and the Jets are probably feeling good about themselves starting this game, and then it just kind of decreased. And that's, I think, what we saw entering overtime, and then anything can happen in 3-on-3 hockey.
Yeah, and I'm not going to, you can't really extrapolate a lot out of an overtime session.
Correct.
I was a little surprised, and this is obviously second-guessing, I was a little surprised that Paul Maurice went with Drew Stafford as one of the shooters over Nikolaj Ehlers. I would have gone with Ehlers, at that point when the game is on the line. Drew Stafford really didn't play very well. Was responsible for the first Red Wings goal of the game, where he takes the puck back into the Jets zone after it's cleared and then turns it over. I mean, I don't want to, you're flipping a coin oftentimes when you're talking about a shootout order, but I thought that was a curious decision by the Jets head coach, especially for Nikolaj Ehlers, a guy who's obviously, been snake bitten, and you could see the frustration on his face when he had another breakaway that was foiled by Peter Mrazek, and he puts his glove over top of his hand.
Yeah, I was going to reference
you
that.
You saw him curse or swear.
That was not a nice word.
It was not a nice word that came out of his mouth. So I'm thinking, shootout, this might be a great opportunity for Nikolaj Ehlers to get off the schneid. Maurice chooses Stafford. Obviously, Stafford isn't able to deposit a pass. Mrazek, Jets end up losing. Don't want to make more out of that than it really is, because it's a shootout, but a curious decision from the Jets head coach, I would say.
Quickly, I don't disagree with you. I take Ehlers over Stafford. We're forgetting about the big elephant in the room here. Connor Hellebuyck hasn't been good.
No.
Connor Hellebuyck needs to be better, and I'm a big fan of Connor Hellebuck's game, and I think that he has more to offer, guys, but we're talking about a goaltender who needs to be better. I think he can be better, but if you look at the goals that were scored on him last night, and you could throw in the goals in the shootout, and Henrik Zetterberg puts a really nice move on Connor Hellebuyck there, but I would say that two of those three goals were Connor Hellebuyck's fault.
In the goals in regulation time.
Yes.
Well, the first goal certainly was. I mean, it was a weak shot on him, and he can't corral the rebound. He puts it right onto the stick of Tomas Tatar, really. He was just sort of standing there. This is an innocuous play.
Yep.
Say that 10 times fast.
It did rebound off like three players on the way to the net.
But he's got to control that rebound. Just cover it up. I mean,
nice play by Tatar also to bat that, like, rolling puck, but yeah, whatever.
I just don't think it should ever get to that point in time. Connor Hellebuyck was fighting the puck, I thought, the entirety of the game. There were a number of different times where the Red Wings did not score, but that he was unable to corral it in front of him, that he just looked shaky the entire time. I wonder if there's an element of fatigue settling in for Connor Hellebuyck. He's played a lot of hockey lately. I mean, Michael Hutchinson is only, the last start Michael Hutchinson got was Saturday night as part of the back-to-back against St. Louis. I wonder if Connor Hellebuyck is getting a little bit fatigued getting this much playing time at this point in the season.
Well, that could be the case. That could not be the case. He's got to be better. I mean, he's the number one goaltender. They've decided to give him the majority of the starts, Drew, so he's got to be better. And again, I'm not singling him out. I think there were many players on the Jets that didn't play well last night, but you can't tell me that 29 games into the season, Connor Hellebuyck has been good.
I don't argue with you. He's been at best average, and I thought last night he was less than average.
And he's had good games, don't get me wrong, and I'm not, again, putting this all on him, but if the Jets want to be a playoff team this year, they're going to need better goaltending. And to me, that was a huge difference in that game.
9-10 save percentage, 2.67 goals against average. That's not going to cut it. That is, you know, Pavlik-esque numbers.
Well, and shutouts have taken those numbers down as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, two shutouts. And I mean, I think you saw it last night, at least from our vantage point in the press box. I think that Detroit certainly came in after, not so much in the first period, but in periods 2 and 3, when they saw Connor Hellebuck struggling, they said, we're going to shoot it from everywhere on him. And the rebounds were there, and they had some opportunities that the Jets were fortunate that the game even got into overtime. I mean, you saw that third period. That third period was crap hockey. I mean, you know, pardon my French. That third period, they had, what, a grand total of 5 shots between the two teams in the third period?
Well, the second half of the second period wasn't good for the Jets either. But no. From both teams' perspective, yeah, the third period, that's why they were talking about it a lot on Hustler and Lawless, sure. About how both teams were kind of hanging on for that point, just trying to get it to the overtime, which was arguably one of the best overtimes we've ever seen at the MTS Center.
It's a lot of skill on the ice in that overtime.
But again, I mean, yeah, are the Jets tired right now? Sure, they've played more games than anyone else, and they had a really tough November, but are you going to use that as an excuse?
Well, I mean,
they were pretty good in the first period.
Yeah, and that's just it. So you can, and they had Monday off. So, I mean, yes, they played a lot of hockey, but that's an excuse. It's clearly an excuse. If you can play that well for the first 20 minutes of the game after a day off, a complete day off. It's not like this is a back-to-back situation where you play well for 20 minutes and then you get tired because you've played 2 games in 24 hours.
And again, is yesterday's result a symptom of a young team? Is it a symptom of a difficult schedule? Or is it just a team that didn't play very well in the second half of that game? Yeah. I mean, it could be all of those. It could be one of those. It was one of those games where it was pretty much night and day between the team in the first period and the team in the second and third period. So, again, I mean, it's, you know, a situation where they are lucky to get a point.
Yeah.
And, you know, you move on. You've got 5 points. You've got points in 5 of your last 6 games, 4-1-1. So you have to pretty much move on and take the positives and, you know, learn from the negatives.
Look, if the Jets are left with a sour taste in their mouth because they feel they left a point on the table and a regulation win on the table, that might not necessarily be a bad thing in that it keeps some motivation going, keeps some drive going, says, we know we need to be better for 60 minutes if we want both points in regulation here. Quickly, before we shift our focus to the Rangers and the Jets tomorrow evening, a quick word on your impressions on Dylan Larkin. I thought Dylan Larkin was fantastic for the Red Wings last night. Sort of the first time I've been able to really glimpse him up close. Last year, I was out of town for the Jets-Red Wings game, the one game they played at MTS Center. I thought Dylan Larkin was the best Red Wings player on the ice last night, and I can see why anybody who's trying to make a trade with Detroit is trying to steal him away from the Red Wings. He was that impressive.
Well, he's not getting traded.
I know he's not getting traded because he's that impressive. I mean, he's their future, and you can see it based on his performance last night, just how good he was.
Yeah, he put his feet on display yesterday. He was moving all over the ice. He was zipping around. And how about that shot that he rang off the crossbar? I believe it was the third period.
Yes.
Yeah, that had a release on it. We talk about Patrick Laine's release. That thing came off his stick in a hurry. And I just want to touch on that shootout quickly once more. It seemed like the Red Wings knew exactly where they wanted to go on Connor Hellebuck in that shootout. They all deked to his glove hand, and you said, didn't really make any saves in that one.
The first goal, the first attempt by Nielsen, I mean, really should have gone in.
Yeah, exactly.
The Jets were fortunate. The second one he was beaten on as well by Nyquist, and the puck just, I think, rolled off his stick. And then it took Zetterberg and Vanek to beat him. But, I mean,
Vanek tip. Whew, that was a nice goal. That was a beauty, but all by himself standing beside the net.
Exactly, which seems to be a bit of a defensive miscue. In any event, the Jets and the Rangers, they go to battle tomorrow night at MTS Center. We'll talk about that next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Three goals in a 4-minute and 4-second span in the second period by the New York Rangers, and the Rangers go on to win it 5-2 at Madison Square Garden.
Earlier in November, the Jets' visit to New York did not turn out the way the team wanted, falling at Madison Square Garden to a then best in the NHL New York Rangers. The Jets look for redemption tomorrow evening as the Rangers make their sole visit to MTS Center, I suppose, barring a Stanley Cup finals between these two teams. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, I suppose. This is a New York Rangers team that has been scuffling a little bit, particularly since they had that tremendous start to the season. Their own, they lost last night to the woeful New York Islanders, are now 4-5-1 in their last 10, 17-9-1 so far on the season. Still a very good record on the entirety of the season, but struggling as of late and now quite banged up. New York Rangers will be without both Rick Nash tomorrow. He left yesterday's game with a groin injury. I believe that Jimmy Vesey is day to day. He might be out of the lineup for the Winnipeg Jets. For the New York Rangers tomorrow. He'll travel to Winnipeg, but it's still questionable if he's going to play for the Rangers. Mark Pumple, he got a concussion.
Matt Pumple.
Pardon me. I get Mark Kumple, the old Winnipeg Jets player, and Matt Pumple confused. So Rick, he'll be out of the lineup. He had a concussion yesterday. Mika Zibanejad, he's already out of the lineup, and so is Pavel Buchnevich. So a banged-up New York Rangers team makes their way to Winnipeg tomorrow evening to play against the Jets. And worth noting, the Jets avoid Henrik Lundqvist. Antti Raanta gets the start for the Rangers in that tomorrow.
Yeah, and Antti Raanta's actually been very good. His numbers are better than Henrik Lundqvist, but certainly Henrik Lundqvist has been one of the best goalies in the NHL now for 10 years. So Pavel Buchnevich is a guy that scored against the Jets at MSG, but this Winnipeg Jets team right now, they are in a position to make up some ground in the standings, and especially the way they're playing. And, you know, you talk about the New York Rangers and the struggles that they've had. This is still the number one offense in the NHL, Drew. And you might be missing Rick Nash, and you might be missing Mika Zibanejad, but they have a lot of guys that can put the puck in the net. And, you know, right now, this isn't your grandfather's New York Rangers. This isn't the defensive shell team like we've expected over the years. So still a lot of talent on this Rangers roster. Former Manitoba Moose Michael Grabner is having a great season. JT Miller is having a career season so far. He's on pace for a career season. So they have a lot of versatility on this roster. Very tough, to score against. So it's going to be a test. And, you know, we already saw the Jets lose in New York. So, it's going to be a tough one. And the Jets have beat some good teams in their own division this year, but they've struggled against the Eastern Conference. And again, it's going to be a big test for them.
You mentioned Michael Grabner. Worth noting, he has been away from the Rangers team attending to his grandmother's funeral back in Austria. They expect him to be in Winnipeg, I think, tomorrow for the game. No word yet, of course, if he's actually going to suit up for the Rangers or not. No, they'll know more tomorrow when they get to the pregame skate. But that is worth mentioning about Michael Grabner, who has been a tremendous find for the Rangers. Probably one of the best free agent steals of the entire season, given his performance so far this season.
Yeah, you talk about a guy that can fly. Michael Grabner puts his speed on display every time he hits the ice. That guy gets a breakaway every game, and now he's just starting to bury them, and he's tallying up points like there's no tomorrow. Mm-hmm. The only thing that concerns me about, well, many things concern me about this game entering tomorrow, is that when you see a depleted lineup due to injury, the issue I have, especially with one that was sitting Henrik Lundqvist for Antti Raanta, you may get a false sense of confidence that you don't got to bring it 100%, and, you know, we got a depleted lineup. I hope that's not the mentality. This seems like a trap game if you're going to go into that kind of the game with this sort of mentality that, you know, because Rick Nash and a few other players aren't here that you can kind of lay off a little bit. That's not the case. Jets got to remember what happened last night. They got to remember what happened the last time they took to the ice versus the Rangers. Of course, the Rangers scored 4 goals in the second period. We teased that coming into the segment. So the dreaded second reared its ugly head again last time we played. And hopefully both teams are going to be looking for a little bit of revenge. The Rangers are coming off a loss to the Islanders, so it should be a good, fast, heavy game that will be on the MTS Center ice tomorrow.
Yeah, you mentioned, as you know, that the New York Rangers aren't, you know, the New York Rangers of old. Their defense is, with the exception of Ryan McDonagh and Dan Girardi, they've been the two best defensemen for the Rangers this season. The bottom four on the back end, Mark Stahl, Nick Holden, Brady Skye, and Kevin Klein, all have been relatively struggling so far this year. So this Rangers team, I mean, sort of one of two thoughts. Losing so many guys from their lineup, do they sort of focus on the defensive side of things and really clamp down on that end, or are they weakened and play a more open style because they're losing the guy, missing such regulars out of their lineup?
Teams don't change the style they play based on players that aren't in the lineup. I realize what you're saying, Drew, and Sean makes a good point. I don't think the Jets will ever enter a game and look at the injured roster and say, well, Rick Nash and Mika Zibanejad aren't in the lineup, or Michael Grabner is not going to be in the lineup, right? They have a game plan. They need to execute it. To me, guys, they have to play a similar style to the games against St. Louis and against Chicago, both games that they won. And, you know, you're talking about a Winnipeg Jets team that has been very unpredictable this year. And again, you know, this is a young team, and we were expecting this team to be unpredictable, but you still have to play within a defensive structure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to, you know, yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Antti Raanta going to be in goal for the Rangers. He would certainly be familiar with the Winnipeg Jets as he was previously with the Chicago Blackhawks. So there might be some security there, you know, Raanta. And you say his numbers are better than Henrik Lundqvist's, and they have been all season long. I mean, he gets full marks for what he's had, which is a very good season in that as the backup goaltender for the Rangers. And, you know, it's certainly, like you said, the Jets can't go into this game looking at their opponent and thinking they're going to be a cakewalk. That being said, if they can look at their game and saying, our opponent has been weakened, and now we need to impose our will upon them, that might be a decent attitude to change. They talked about that post-game last night, that, you know, they had the Red Wings down, they had the Red Wings almost out, they didn't step on their throats. You know, it's that killer instinct that you need to have in order to prevent your opponent from even having a shred of confidence. A good start for the Jets tomorrow will certainly go a long way to giving the positive vibes that would be necessary.
Yeah, we would hope so. We had a good there was a good start yesterday at the MTS Center, and look how the results.
Got to keep it going for 60 minutes.
Exactly,
though, so that's the
absolutely.
Lesson
from
but last night.
It's interesting that we talk about how the East has kind of shifted to more of a dominant force in the league this year based on just the speed and talent. And I think this Rangers team is a team that the Jets are trying to mirror themselves after based on speed and skill, less of that physical grind that we're so used to in the West, and that they're trying to transition themselves to that high flying, fast tempo, move the puck and just get it in the offensive zone as quick as possible. So if both teams come out flying, it's going to be a heck of a game, man, at the MTS Center.
Yeah, Rangers have allowed the second most 5-on-5 shots in the league per game this year.
Do you think that's just because they have so much confidence in their goaltender?
I think there's probably an element of that. I mean, you know, it's been a lot of years where Henrik Lundqvist, 5-on-5, has bailed out the New York Rangers.
Yeah, I saw that set, so that kind of got me thinking about that.
This season, he's got a .918 save percentage in 5-on-5 situations. And, of course, that's where you play the majority of your game action is 5-on-5. That's 15th in the NHL. Last season in 5-on-5 situations, his save percentage was .934. Of course, the Jets aren't going to be facing Henrik Lundqvist tomorrow. So, I mean, it might be, it's sort of hard to say, but hard to believe, but, I mean, you're almost, maybe the Winnipeg Jets would rather face Henrik Lundqvist than Antti Raanta, given the way Lundqvist has been struggling lately and really thus far this year. He usually is a better goaltender in the second half of the season. He's notorious for slow starts. But, you know, in this case, the Jets are going to be getting Antti Raanta tomorrow.
You also brought up a really good point, Drew, about the familiarity of Antti Raanta with the Jets being with the Blackhawks, and he's probably seen them way more than Henrik Lundqvist over his past however many years. And he probably knows a little bit of the tendencies and a little bit of what the team likes to do, and he's seen the majority of these players. And, yeah, it's he probably went up to the coach and said, I've seen these guys before. I know what some of their tendencies and what their habits are, and I think I got a pretty good grasp of what they're going to try to do.
Sure, and Lanvino, of course, makes his return to MTS Center tomorrow, a former coach of the Manitoba Moose. Should mention, before we head to break, we're going to bring in Dave Maloney, Rangers radio analyst, coming up next segment. Should mention that this segment was brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team, or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com, or visit their new showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. When we come back, Dave Maloney, Rangers radio analyst, joins us. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're thrilled to welcome back to the program Dave Maloney. Dave is the New York Rangers radio analyst on the MSG Radio Network. Dave, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us, and welcome to snowy Winnipeg.
Well, it certainly is an abrupt introduction to the holiday season, that's for sure. But all in all, it's nice to be in Winnipeg, and certainly the Jets are playing well, and the Rangers not quite so, but it'll be an interesting night tomorrow night, I'm sure, at the MTS Center.
Absolutely it will, and of course that's why we brought you on, is to preview tomorrow night's Jets-Rangers contest. And we had you on, you know, at the beginning of November, mm-hmm. when the Jets and the Rangers met at Madison Square Garden. And that New York Rangers team was really flying high. They were, you know, pretty close to the NHL lead if they weren't already, if they weren't the top team in the league at that point in time. Since then, or as of late, sort of struggling, 4-5-1 in their last 10. This isn't the same New York Rangers team we saw at the start of the season. What's been the difference? Just sort of the, is it the standard ups and downs in the course of an NHL season? Or is there something more deep-rooted and concerning with the Rangers play as of late?
Oh, I think you're... Well, really, injuries. I mean, they're not the only team that gets banged up. And, of course, Winnipeg has certainly suffered their share of injuries. But from a Rangers standpoint, they have been devastated by injuries. And Rick Nash goes down last night. Grabner did not play last night. His grandfather passed away, so he went back to Austria. He should be here tomorrow. And they're playing without Zibanejad and Buchnevich. So when Buchnevich and Zibanejad went down, this Ranger team, the forwards were slotted into pretty good spots. And now you've got, like any team that has to adjust when their lead players go down, you get people playing a little out of character, a little out of role. So I think, and it was a Ranger team that was billed early as speed and possession and skill, and they're not quite so. And simply put, with the added injury now with Nash out, they are a bit of a shadow of what they were for the first 15 or 17 games. So there's no question teams have certainly adapted to how the Rangers wanted to play. And any team is going to go through the ups and downs, as you mentioned, over the course of the season. And I guess the key is how long do the downs last, and where do you stand when you get out of your funk? And the Rangers are in a bit of a funk at the present time.
Dave, you just mentioned Rick Nash, and he's having a good season thus far. He's got 11 goals. He's not going to play tomorrow night against the Winnipeg Jets, as we talked about. What's the latest injury update on Rick?
There's really no... it is a groin issue, which was admitted post-game last night. He did not skate today. He did not travel with the team. The Rangers go head to Chicago and play there on Friday night, so he won't play in either game. And it's that he has been arguably the Rangers' best forward. The goals, and I think early, I think we did talk in Boston about, we were in Boston when we spoke. Mm-hmm. We talked about how the spreading of the offense very much benefited Rick Nash, because he was able to fly under the radar screen, accumulate his goals, and the team was enjoying success. And when Buchnevich and Zibanejad went down, he took it upon himself to take a real leadership role, and he was playing very, very well. So he's going to be missed. He's been their best player, and the jury is still out as to how long he will be out, but like you said, he's going to be missed.
Dave, I'm just kind of curious about Jimmy Vesey. There was so much hype about him, mm-hmm. moving into the season, and I know he's hurt right now. But what have your been impressions of the youngster thus far entering the season?
Well, actually, he's not hurt. He's he's one of the top six, and he is 9 on the season. I think he's 3rd in rookie goal scoring. Of course, that holds a bit of a shadow to the guy he got here, but he's been fine. I think what will happen with Vesey. First of all, he's coming out of a collegiate schedule. And this schedule, for a veteran, a rookie, or somewhere in the middle, is a bit of a horrific event with the amount of games that have been played. on a short amount of time. And the Rangers aren't alone in that. I mean, every team goes through, has this schedule that started later. You get the 5 days off, the All-Star break. You're going, you know, you're going 4 and 7 sometimes, 5 and 9.5 days. So for a collegiate kid, it's a big, big adjustment. That being said, he continues to be, you know, he's going to be a good player. I think the next step for him is going to be NHL strength. Of course, that will happen in the off season. But in the meantime, with the amount of injuries the Rangers have withstood and are going to have to battle through, VC is going to have to continue who he's been. Has he made his share of innocent rookie mistakes? He certainly has, but he's been a pretty good player.
Dave Maloney, New York Rangers radio analyst, is our guest on NHL This Week. The Rangers in town to face the Winnipeg Jets tomorrow evening at MTS Center. Dave, Henrik Lundqvist, not really putting up Henrik Lundqvist-like numbers, particularly in 5-on-5 play as of recent, you know, down to a 918 5-on-5 save percentage, 15th in the NHL, well below last season's 934 save percentage. You know, we know that he's a notoriously sort of slow starter and he finds his stride, you know, generally once January and or so hits. Expect the same thing from Lundqvist, or are there, you know, concerns that maybe the age and the toll is beginning to take make an impact on his performance?
Well, I guess time will only tell that. He continues to be the most important Ranger. We talk about Nash being pretty good forward, and Ryan McDonough's had a great start after 25 games. But really, at the end of the day, you can be okay with status quo goaltending. But to reach the, you know, the real elite status and threatened status, you need elite goaltending. And it's interesting because Lundqvist probably comes off a game last night in Brooklyn where really you needed him to make a save and he didn't. The Rangers outshot the Islanders 15-9 in the first period and they were down 2-0 on. And I think the thing that bears watching with Lundqvist, it's really now more of we're just a little bit surprised at his positioning and goal. He seems to be getting beat on angle shots and different things like that. That, you know, early in his career he was vulnerable up high. You know, he's a smaller stature a man in that position, but he's a competitor and all those things that have made him who he has been. His positioning, having never played that position, mind you. But most of us who observe him through thick and thin, he's a little off in his positioning. And yet we do know he is the ultimate competitor. He never stands down when he has to kind of talk about his game or his team's game. So there's every expectation. There's been 10 or 11 years of body of work here for this guy, and he continues to be the most important player.
Dave, we were talking about this right before we had you on, the style of this New York Rangers team that you've come to expect and what Winnipeg Jets fans will see tomorrow night. It's not necessarily the smothering defensive style that maybe you saw 3 years ago when the New York Rangers went to the Stanley Cup final against the LA Kings, but you look at the Rangers' top three defensemen, Dan Girardi, Ryan McDonough, and Mark Stahl. Those three defensemen remain. Guys like John Moore and Anton Strålman were obviously a big part of that group 3 years ago, but what has changed most about the style of this team from 3 years ago or 2 years ago to now?
Well, you know what? I think the game has changed in that amount of time. I think that the Ranger team you're going to see tomorrow night will not be the team that got out of the gate 13-4. They're, simply put, they're not quite as skilled. So the back end is going to be only as good offensively and skilled as the people up front. And when you take the guys out of the lineup that the Rangers won't have in the lineup, they're not going to be the same team. So I think there are many observations that perhaps the Rangers' Achilles heel might be in their own end, actually, given where the game's going, where you need guys that can take the puck, defend, take the puck, make a play. Defend, you know, a lot of teams defend for the sake of defending. And a lot of teams do that well, blocking shots, clogging up the middle. The next step is can you take that game and dovetail it into a play up ice? And I'm not convinced that the Rangers are there, even when they were 13-4 and doing what they were doing. I think there was always a suspicion that the Rangers might not be quite as capable in today's game as you need to be to take the next step. That being said, McDonough, Girardi, and Staal are very, and Klein are very capable defenders. And I think from a Ranger standpoint, they may have to rely on that defending and goaltending to get them through this spell where they're not quite as skilled up front.
Dave, you just mentioned that Girardi, McDonough, and Staal are very capable defensemen. And, you know, some people look at that dominant team that went to the Stanley Cup Finals and almost won the Stanley Cup 3 years ago, and they say Ryan McDonough's lost a step, Dan Girardi's lost a step. Do you think that's been over-exaggerated?
Well, there's no question McDonough has not lost a step. McDonough, if we talk about Nash being their best player, McDonough's right on his shoulder. McDonough, see what happened with McDonough in 2014? There was an expectation that he was going to take, or a hope or whatever, that it was time for him to take the next step, become a Doughty, to become the Carlson, like the impact defender off the blue line, Letang. You look at every team that's won the Cup, Duncan Keith. Every team that's won the Cup has had that catalyst off the blue line, and I think a lot of people thought that Ryan McDonough was that guy for the Rangers. I'm not sure his skill sets are the same as those three guys I just mentioned. As far as Girardi is concerned, I think he played basically hurt all last season. The shortened off season for Dan Girardi worked wonders. He's been Dan Girardi that goes about his business, is going to defend, can make a little pass to get you out of Dodge. But I guess the question is, if Pittsburgh becomes the benchmark for teams that want to play and contend and be legitimate, are the Rangers as quick making a play in their own end to get up ice as those elite teams are? I think the jury's still out.
Dave, I just got a question about Michael Grabner. Has his offensive production been one of the most pleasant surprises for the Rangers this season?
Oh, there's no question. Given to his training camp, he did not have a very good camp. But for his two-year, one-way deal, there was a thought that there might have been a couple other guys in that roster opening night. But there are a lot of times the guys have been around a little bit. You can't put a whole lot into the camp. And he was certainly one of them because he scored opening night against the Islanders in a 5-3 win at the Garden, and he hasn't looked back. And I think the things that have impressed most of us, there's certainly his open ice speed and his threatening speed, his speed to get into position to make a play. But what's been impressive is his hands and his stick. When he gets on top of people, he's got such quick hands that he bats pucks out of the air and away he goes. I'm not sure he's the greatest finisher, because if he was a finisher, he'd have 20 by now. Given how quickly he gets to a position to find the puck and how quick his hands are to knock pucks down. So there's no question. That would be the understatement by a mile to suggest or to not acknowledge what a very pleasant surprise Michael Grabner has been.
The Rangers and the Jets will do battle tomorrow evening at MTS Center. Dave Maloney has the color analysis on the MSG Radio Network. Dave, really appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us to talk about the Rangers. Stay warm.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Dave. Take care. Let's go to break. When we come back, we are going to talk about the Colorado Avalanche. Joe Sakic gives the dreaded vote of confidence to the Avalanche core group. We'll talk about the Avs next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Kind of pulled together as a team tonight, coming out on the road. For me, if you do that on every night, then you're going to win more than you lose. And it was a tough way to lose tonight, but it's the best game we played in a week. So we got to take something out of it. And I think the work ethic that they brought tonight was a positive thing.
That's Colorado Avalanche head coach Jared Bednar speaking after last night's Avalanche loss to the Nashville Predators. Something he is becoming all too familiar with as the Avs have fallen to 3-6-1 in their last 10 games played, 9-14-1 so far this season, good for 19 points, which is dead last in the NHL. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you. This segment brought to you by Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So as I was saying, the Colorado Avalanche, the worst team in the NHL, they've scored the fewest goals in the NHL so far this season, with 52 goals for in their first 24 games, just over 2 goals per game. Joe Sakic came out this week in an interview with Terry Fry of the Denver Post and demonstrated and expressed his faith in the core six players of the Colorado Avalanche. Those core six players, Nathan MacKinnon, Gabriel Landeskog, Matt Duchene, Tyson Barrie, the now injured Eric Johnson, and the tremendously struggling Semyon Varlamov. Those six players all signed long-term for the Colorado Avalanche. Joe Sakic gave him the vote of confidence, saying he believes those six players can turn things around in Colorado. I ask you guys, how many more years, how much longer is it going to take for the Colorado Avalanche to turn things around? Is it time for them to shake up the core? Is it time for them to trade one of Landeskog or Duchene, the two names most often mentioned, assuming Varlamov's contract isn't going to be able to be moved anywhere based on his current performance? Are they the new Edmonton Oilers, sticking with a core way too long of high draft picks that just can't get it done in the NHL?
Yeah, Drew, and there isn't just one team that has done that in the past. The Calgary Flames have been victims of hanging on to the core too long. My question is, does Joe Sakic have a choice? I mean, how does he not put his faith and confidence in the core? The Colorado Avalanche have signed these guys to long-term contracts. Does he have a choice, right? So, I mean, this is the worst team in the NHL right now. I picked them to be dead last in the Central. I'm not surprised at all the way they're playing right now. I mean, you look at this defense, and it's simply not good enough in today's NHL. And Nathan MacKinnon is obviously one of the untouchables. Look, at the Colorado Avalanche finished last in the NHL 4 years, and they got Nathan MacKinnon.
Mm-hmm.
You have to ask yourself, what has changed in those 4 years? Have they got any better? And I would argue that they haven't. And sure, they are dealing with some injuries. Matt Duchene has missed some games, and some other players have missed games. But you look at where this team is going, and it's sideways, in my opinion. We didn't expect them to be good this year. Nobody picked the Avalanche to win the Stanley Cup. I think you would agree that at the beginning of the year, most people picked this team to either be last in the Central second last.
Not a playoff team, certainly.
So, I mean, none of this should shock anybody, or nothing's new here. And, you know, you look
30th,
at the
30th, though? I mean, this is a team that's got Matt Duchene perennially on Team Canada, Gabriel Landeskog, terrific young player, Nathan MacKinnon.
Five or six players don't make a team good.
I know they don't make a team good, but they should make a team better than 30th in the NHL. Those six guys on their own.
I had them as a bottom five team, so I'm not surprised. You're asking me, and I'm not surprised.
Okay.
I thought they would be a bottom five team in the league this year. And
then let me ask you this. How do they get out from being a bottom five team in the league?
Well, the goaltending's not good enough.
Right.
The defense is not good enough.
Okay.
And really, I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, Patrick Waugh leaves the team. Nobody expected that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jared Bednar's inheriting a team that isn't good enough. I mean, did anyone honestly, if you guys know someone out there that thought the Colorado Avalanche were going to be better this year, and I'm not saying that they can't be better than dead last, but what was the best they could be this year, 25th?
They weren't going to be. I agree with you. I didn't have them as a playoff team, Sean. I assume you didn't have them as a playoff team.
Nope.
But let me go back to the core question, though. Joe Sakic, you know, giving a vote of confidence to the core.
But what choice does he have?
Well, Matt Duchene or Gabriel Landeskog would certainly be attractive if you need defensemen, which I agree they need defensemen.
No, but you're saying those are two separate things. You're saying, should he make a trade? But he's obviously going to give a vote of confidence to his core players. What other choice? He's not going to go out there and he's going to say, I have no confidence in my core players.
This is a Colorado Avalanche organization that is known as being one of the most private organizations in the NHL.
Yep, that's right.
He probably, you know, I'm not sure why he agreed at this point in time to talk to Terry Fry. You know, I don't know first of all, I don't think that his vote of confidence really means anything, push comes to shove. You know, if there's a trade there that he wants to make, he'll make the trade. It's not like this is that his words are gospel. But I'm not sure why he wouldn't be looking to shake up the quote-unquote core.
I'm in agreement with you there. I think that this team needs to make a trade. Look at the defense right now, Drew. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Eric Johnson, who's injured. Eric Johnson, Tyson Berry, Nikita Zadorov, Francois Beauchemin, Patrick Wierkoch, Eric Zelina. Might be the worst defense in the league.
It's bad. It's very
and they haven't addressed that. You've kept, you know, you mentioned, you know, Tyson Berry as one of those core members along with Eric Johnson.
Because on a good team,
those guys are maybe three or four defensemen.
But Berry is a core. I mean, I think Tyson Berry's, you know, contract is a very tradable contract. I think Gabriel Landeskog's contract is a very appealing contract. You know, I think Matt Duchene, you're talking about guys who are in their mid-20s. And who have shown that they can put up points in the NHL.
Oh, absolutely, and I agree with you. But if you can't get to the puck to those guys, the defense is too slow. Eric Zelina and Francois Beauchemin are too slow in today's NHL.
Fine. So you're saying that it's a. So how do you address the defense problem?
I think you either do this via trade, or you do this via free agency. But right now, I mean, let's be honest here. Tyson Jost is a good prospect. He's doing well for the University of North Dakota. He was drafted 10th overall. They've got some prospects in the system. Mikko Rantanen was a high draft pick in 2015. He's actually looked really good. I mean, they have some young pieces there. Nathan MacKinnon, you forget, is still in his early 20s.
Right.
It seems like he's been in the league for seven years, but he hasn't.
3 years now.
There are good players here, but you look at those bottom two lines.
And they're not good.
They're just not a good team. That's what I'm trying to say. They're just not good.
But I don't know. And then I'm saying I think the way for them to get better is to maybe consider trading one of the core six players.
Right.
Because those core six players, if they can't get the puck, and I agree with you that, you know, the defense isn't good enough, and that's probably part of the reason is that they're just always, you know, playing on their heels because they can't defend.
And that was a problem last year too, Drew.
So why would they just continue to do the same thing over? And it's like the Edmonton Oilers. Sure. Why, you know, they needed defense for so many years. The Oilers still need defense. It just so happens that Connor McDavid, you know, covers up so many of your warts. The Colorado Avalanche can't expect Connor McDavid to fall into their lap again.
Right. And,
to fall into their lap like he did for the Oilers.
Sean Nassar wants to get in here, but, you know, you look at what they did in the offseason. What were their big moves? Signing Patrick Wierkoch and Joel Colburn. I mean, those are good players, but those players aren't going to change the outlook of your team.
Patrick Wierkoch is a fringe top four defenseman. Yes. He's not a top four defenseman on a good hockey team.
I think they need a number one defenseman. Eric Johnson, in my opinion, is not a number one defenseman.
Eric Johnson has never proven to be as good as his pedigree as a first overall draft pick. Tyson Berry certainly is an offensively inclined defenseman. But you don't get these good defensemen. I mean, good defensemen just don't get into free agency, and Colorado is not typically a sought-after free agent destination. So I'm not sure how they expect to get these great defensemen if they insist on sticking with the core, as Joe Sakic said, or gave him a vote of confidence. So I'm not sure how you improve without making a trade and using one of your desirable assets as that trade for the good defenseman.
If you're a Colorado Avalanche fan, Sean, the best thing is for this team to finish worst or second worst in the NHL and get Nolan Patrick or Timothy Liljegren. I think that's the best thing that could happen for the Avalanche because they're not making the playoffs this year. I mean, they're way too far behind right now to make up those points, right?
Right.
We've talked about it. After American Thanksgiving, if you're 4 or 5 points out of it, you're out of it.
So let's say that, you know, they get Timothy Liljegren, and he's the defenseman, he's the Swedish defenseman and everything else. So, you know, it takes him – let's assume he's not Aaron Ekblad, and it takes him 2 years to really get his feet under him in the NHL. Not an unreasonable expectation for a young defenseman, right? You'd agree with that? Well, guess what? Matt Duchene is almost an unrestricted free agent at that point in time. So what's the point of holding on to Matt Duchene for these next 3 years if you're going to lose him for nothing when he hits unrestricted free agency? I'm just saying, this Avalanche team seems to be happy to stand pat and not do anything year after year. They're like the Oilers.
What's interesting to me in this vote of confidence is that, you know, Patrick Waugh kind of took off abruptly at the end of the off season, and I'm wondering if Patrick Waugh saw this developing, said something, The team was supposedly one of the issues. The team was reluctant to change, and he was like, "All right, I'm out. I'm out before this hits the fan."
The word on the street is that Patrick Waugh wanted to see some changes among the core group, and obviously Joe Sakic and the other administration pushed back against him, and Patrick went home.
So let's say they blow it up, right? Let's say they blow it up this year. They want to get some defense. They want to get some new draft picks. Isn't that just of a kind of like, "I told you so" by Patrick Waugh? Isn't this just kind of the only way the organization can save face in this situation?
It's not that it requires a complete blow up, though, because you do already have the first overall pick that would be, you know, you have your quote-unquote Connor McDavid because you have Nathan MacKinnon. I mean, Nathan MacKinnon should be better than he has been because he's getting wasted playing on this Colorado Avalanche team. So if your problem is getting him the puck and if your problem is getting him going, use Gabriel Landeskog or use Matt Duchene. Those two guys are going to fetch you a pretty decent return, and then you maybe change the entire dynamic of the team without having to go through a quote-unquote full blow-up situation.
Yeah, and I think that's a strong possibility, Drew. Whether you want to compare the Colorado Avalanche's situation to the Toronto Maple Leafs situation a couple years ago when they traded Phaneuf and Kessel, or if you want to compare it to the Edmonton Oilers situation, you know, trading Taylor Hall to get Adam Larson, right? Is that not, are there not parallels there, right? This Colorado Avalanche team right now, I don't think is very well suited or is better served, I should say, by finishing 10th or 11th in the West, right? Mm-hmm. You would want a higher draft pick. Again, and it goes back to what I said, I had very low expectations for this team. And, you know, I apologize if you're listening and you're an Avalanche fan out there, but they're just not a very good team. I mean, we've watched this team many times, and the Avalanche did beat the Jets in overtime earlier this year.
Sure. I mean,
but we've watched this team many times, and it's just not a good team. And, you know, Nathan MacKinnon, sure, he's one of the best young players in the game. Matt Duchene, great hockey player. But after you get past, you know, four or five players on this team, it's a very mediocre team.
No argument there. Let's head to break. When we return, Ryan Kennedy from the Hockey News joins us on NHL This Week. You're listening to TSN 12.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week for Wednesday, the 7th of December. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Sean Assor with you here in TSN 1290 studios. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program Ryan Kennedy. Ryan is an associate senior writer with the Hockey News. Ryan, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Ryan. I wanted to start off, I'm going to talk about sort of the entire world of hockey, but you are the prospects expert, quote-unquote, at the Hockey News. I want to start off with a guy who plays about 2 hours west of us in Brandon, Manitoba, or the Wheat Kings would rather he play more for them. That's Nolan Patrick. He's still out of the lineup. It's been announced he's not medically cleared, and he's going to miss the World Junior Hockey Championships coming up in about 2 weeks' time. You wrote a recent column in the Hockey News about how that's going to affect his draft ranking. How do you think that's going to affect his draft ranking? You know, haven't seen him on the ice much as of late. He missed the summer showcase as well. Are people maybe beginning to have questions about Nolan Patrick?
I'm not really hearing that. I was actually just talking to an NHL exec today, and it's tough because the injury, it's very kind of non-defined. There's soreness. They're not quite sure what the problem is, but he needs time, and that's why we keep hearing it's kind of day-to-day or week-to-week. The good thing for Nolan Patrick is because he's a late birthday, because he just missed last year's draft, there's a pretty good book on him. And what we know about Nolan Patrick is that he's got great size. He does everything pretty well. He may not be a Connor McDavid or an Austin Matthews, but he's going to be a very good player in the NHL for a long time. And as I was saying in my column, you kind of have to discount these injuries because you look at Alex Galchenyuk, you look at Morgan Riley, they missed almost their entire draft years, and they turned out to be two of the best players from that class. So as long as you know who the player is, and as long as it's not something like, you know, if he had concussion problems, then maybe you raise a couple flags and say, well, that's something that could get bad really quickly. As long as he's healthy, I think he remains the number one, because I don't see anybody dethroning him at this point.
You know, Ryan, sticking with the 2017 NHL draft that's coming up next June, in previous years, it seemed like there were more defined top two or top three picks. You go back to 2015 with Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel, and then last year with Patrick Laine, Austin Matthews, and Jesse Puljujarvi. This year, when you look at the top two projected picks, Nolan Patrick and then Timothy Liljegren, defenseman out of Sweden, is this maybe a somewhat more wide open than in previous years?
I definitely think so. And I mean, I know just from the exercises I do putting together, you know, draft rankings and putting together top 31s now that we have Vegas. After Liljegren, you really kind of have to pause and say, okay, well, who deserves that third slot? Gabe Vilardi in Windsor is one popular option. Ironically, he's been hurt a couple of times as well, the latest being an appendectomy, so you can't really blame him there. There was Maxime Comtois in Victoriaville, but he kind of struggled this season, so I think his stock is going to drop a bit. You got Klim Kostin in Russia, but he's barely playing at all. He's not getting many minutes. He's actually going to play at the World Junior A Challenge. He has to play well there if he's even going to get a sniff of the Russian World Junior team. And then you have, you know, a couple of other guys in the mix, Owen Tippett in Mississauga. Fischer has been amazing for Halifax in the Quebec League. And then you have Ely Tolvanen in the USHL, who is sort of a Patrick Kane type of undersized guy. So there's definitely options, but it's hard for anybody to really stake a claim yet. I think you're right. It is still wide open.
Ryan, you wrote an article about how Johnny Gaudreau is back and is spectacular. Obviously, the NHL, a better place with Johnny Hockey in it. I want to get your opinion on the plays that resulted in his injury, those, you know, those quote-unquote little whacks that he was receiving throughout that game. What's your thoughts on that, and, you know, how defensemen, you know, play and offensemen play, those smaller skilled players that like to control the puck? What's your thoughts on those, you know, those little whacks to the hand?
It's tricky, because I'm not sure we want a game where every little thing is called, but you kind of have to establish that. And I think there's a lot of gray area in hockey, and we either accept it or we don't. And if you want all that called, then eventually you will get a sanitized game. But, I mean, personally for me, I like the fact that most hockey players, most NHLers will go to the line and toe that line because they want to win. And intimidation and aggression is such a big part of the game. Obviously, I don't want to see players injured. You don't want to see Johnny Gaudreau out for any stretch of time. But I think there's that balance. And, I mean, for me personally, I still like fighting. I don't try to justify it intellectually. I just like to see it. And I like that sort of, like, head game that comes with the intimidation. But these are sort of big-picture questions that I think if you're going to do it right, it's going to result in a lot of penalties in the short term, much like it was in, you know, coming out of the lockout with clutching and grabbing. But you have to ask yourself, what do we want the NHL to be?
Ryan Kennedy is our guest on NHL This Week. You can find Ryan's work at The Hockey News. Ryan, it was announced earlier, about maybe 90 minutes ago or so, that Alex Galchenyuk and David Desharnais are going to be out of the Montreal Canadiens lineup for the next 6 to 8 weeks. If you're Habs general manager Mark Bergevin, do you go and make a trade, however small or however big it may be, to try and shore up your centerman depth? Because you look up the middle now for the Montreal Canadiens, and describing it as thin would be probably the nicest way you could describe it.
Yeah, it's tricky because, I mean, you're right. They're not good down the middle, and it's really a shame because Alex Galchenyuk emerging as a number one guy was, kind of, for me, that was like a big step in legitimizing the Habs as a contender in the East. But if I'm Bergevin, I just ride the wave. I take solace in the fact that they're in a weak division. They will more than likely make the playoffs anyways, even if they go into a bit of a tailspin without Galchenyuk and Darnay. You've got Carey Price. If you can get into the playoffs and you have a healthy Galchenyuk and you have a healthy Price, you've got a chance. And I think, with Shea Weber and Radulov coming in and performing, I would say, above expectations, particularly with Radulov, I think you just ride it out, and it's going to be tough in the short term, but you don't want to sacrifice any of your future for something that you know is going to get better.
Ryan, there was a scary incident last night in the game between the Vancouver Canucks and the New Jersey Devils with Taylor Hall hitting Philip Larson behind the net. Did you think it was a clean hit? And what did you think about the players jumping in there? It's kind of scary with Philip Larson's head getting knocked around a little bit by a Devil's skate.
Yeah, I thought it was a totally clean hit. I think Hall actually probably tried to let up a bit at the last second.
I think we may have lost Ryan.
Oh, no.
Nope, there you are. You're still there. Okay.
There you go. Again, it's, you never want to see a guy hurt, but, I mean, things happen in a fast game. But I would also say that, the players, they've got to be smarter when it comes to the aftermath of these hits. And I know it's difficult because, that's your boy and, you're going into war. But, when we're talking about head injuries and potential neck injuries, you have to be so careful with the guy lying there. And, the idea of going after a guy just because it was a big hit, it's kind of maddening. It's like, I understand the logic that it's like no one's supposed to touch your players and everybody feels the same way, but you're doing more harm than good. And it's a tricky situation, and I understand that, but you kind of wish that cooler heads would prevail and they just kind of take a number and somebody, has words with Hall later.
Ryan, a little bit of a change of topic here. Just looking at your Twitter feed, and you've posted a video of you riding the Windgate bike, and that's obviously one of the most intimidating-looking machines in sports. I'm just curious as to your results and how you fared on the Windgate bike, how terrible it really is.
Yeah, that was from last year's OHL Combine. They had a couple of us journalists try it out. It was very nice of them. We actually did all the tests. But it was funny because I've been going to the NHL Combine for years and sitting in the stands, you sort of say like, that kid could push harder. He doesn't look like he's going very hard. But when you do it, you realize that after about 10 seconds, your legs just give up. They just don't want, and I wanted to do really well, and I was pushing myself mentally, but my legs were just like, nah, this is as fast as we go at this point, because it's weighted. And I will say, I did the best out of all the riders, but at the same time, my score was like maybe two-thirds as good as the best 15 and 16-year-old that was doing the test. So that'll give you an idea of just how elite hockey players are, even at the minor midget level.
Yeah, saying you're the most in shape of the journalist is what I call damning with faint praise there, Ryan.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
We'll let you go on this last question. The Columbus Blue Jackets, somehow they're third in their division, yet they have a tremendous record of 15-5-4. They're sort of just now getting the attention that they deserve based on this tremendous start to the season. Are they more than just sort of a nice story? Are they truly a contender in the Eastern Conference?
I'm still like a little gun shy simply because they're
the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah. Well, and they're coached by John Tortorella, who I kind of feel like at some point he's going to do something that, just flips it all off the rails. But, I mean, Sergei Bobrovsky has won the Vezina Trophy before. Mm-hmm. We know he can be a difference maker. The fact that they're getting offense from different places, I think, is very positive. Alexander Venberg, I think his ascent is very crucial. And then the play of Zach Werenski, I would say, You've got Patrick Laine, and there's all the Toronto kids, but you got to have Zach Werenski in the Calder mix. Just with the amount he's playing and the crucial minutes he's providing and the offense he's giving them from the blue line, it's all very nice in Columbus right now. And as long as they have bought into what Tortorella's preaching and he doesn't do anything too wacky, I think they can at least go a couple of rounds.
Ryan Kennedy covers the world of hockey for the Hockey News. Ryan, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. That's Ryan Kennedy of the Hockey News. Let's go to break. When we return, we're going to talk about Connor McDavid and the concussion spotter who pulled him off the ice Sunday against the Minnesota Wild. Much more to come. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 12.
This week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
All right.
If you hit your head, and Connor McDavid obviously did, he got tripped, did a face plant, hit his face pretty hard on the ice. Yeah. What I would say to this is I don't blame McDavid and the Oilers for being upset about it. The flip side is, what if Connor McDavid wasn't taken out of the game? What if he woke up and they said, oh, you know what, he's got a concussion? Then everybody would be all over you-know-who, the National Hockey League, the Edmonton Oilers, and everybody else, for not taking Connor McDavid out of the game after he blatantly hit his face on the ice and could have possibly been concussed. So, but obviously coaches are not going to love this because you get a 5-on-3 power play and Todd McClellan doesn't have his most dangerous player.
That's TSN hockey insider Bob McKenzie, the Bob Father, addressing Connor McDavid, the concussion spotter, and McDavid's removal from Sunday's game between the Oilers and the Wild. Apropos that this segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. It's apropos because if you wear a mouth guard, it helps prevent concussions. So don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. You know, this one surprises me. So what happened on Sunday is Connor McDavid hit his chin on the ice in Edmonton.
Yeah, he was taken down by Jared Spurgeon.
Yeah.
It looked like a pretty innocuous-looking play. And he hits his head on the ice.
But he hits his jaw on the ice.
Yep.
And then in New York,
yep,
which is where the NHL's... So the NHL has concussion spotters both in the arena, and they have concussion spotters who watch from a war room at NHL headquarters.
And this is relatively new to the NHL.
Yeah, only within the last year, 2 years max. So the concussion spotters in New York see, via the television broadcast, that Connor McDavid has hit his head on the ice, or has hit his face on the ice, and they see him checking himself on the bench, playing with his jaw, playing with his mouth area, playing with his teeth. They call in down to Edmonton and they say to the trainers, take him off the ice, put him into the quiet room, and give him the mandatory concussion testing. You know, we've joked about the quiet room, or we've all heard the jokes about the quiet room. Take him out of the play of action for however many minutes it takes to determine if he suffered a concussion or not. Meanwhile, the Oilers are in the midst of a 5-on-3, and they are not able to use their most dangerous weapon, the best player in hockey, some would say, because he's undergoing this concussion, even though he feels perfectly fine. After the game, he's asked about it, expresses his displeasure with what the concussion spotters forced him to do. Connor McDavid, right or wrong on this matter? Is the NHL erring on the side of caution? Are they being too cautious? Are they being overprotective? Where do you fall on this question in this incident when it comes to concussions and the off-ice concussion spotter?
I think pulling Connor McDavid off of the ice was fantastic. And quite frankly, I'm a little bit surprised about the uproar. You know, you mentioned that, you know, Connor McDavid was surprised that he was pulled off the ice, and Bob McKenzie talked about this. In today's day and age, when we have more information about concussions, you like to call them brain injuries, Drew.
Yeah.
I mean, these are precautionary measures that are taken, right? Connor McDavid is the best young player in the game right now, and there are many good young players in the game. We have one here in Winnipeg in Patrick Laine, Nikolai Ehlers, many good young players here. But when you're talking about Connor McDavid, he's the new face of the NHL here. Mm-hmm. And just because it's Connor McDavid, I think that we're getting a little bit overexcited here. But they would have done this regardless of who was on the ice. Now, you look at the play, and again, it seemed kind of harmless, but the reality is he hits his mouth on the ice. And yeah. If you slow it down, I mean, that can possibly cause a concussion. Well, so I just want to say one thing, yeah. Drew. You mentioned, you know, these concussion spotters are in the arena and also in New York.
At New York, Toronto, NHL headquarters. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, in this particular case, it's a precautionary reason for taking him out of the game. Now, again, Connor McDavid, it turns out, doesn't have a concussion. And many people, by the way, are saying, well, if two guys get into a fight, why aren't they taken out of the game? Well, the reality is, and, you know, some people might not want to hear this, but you can punch a guy four times in the face and he doesn't have a concussion. Now, they can pull a guy out of a game after he's been in a fight if they believe that he's looking a little bit woozy, mm-hmm. or there are some reason to take him out of the game. Now, again, you know, people seem to think that, and Patrick Maroon was one guy who, you know, said it's a man's game. Well, the reality is that they're doing this to protect their players. That's what we talk about all the time on the show. The NHL doesn't do a good job of protecting their players sometimes. Well, in this case, they did a good job.
There's a number of really key quotes, I think, that gives you the mindset of the player. So here's Connor McDavid's quote after the game. I was pretty shocked, to be honest, to be pulled off the ice. I hit my mouth on the ice. You reach up and grab your mouth when you get hit in the mouth. It's a pretty normal thing. Obviously, the spotter thought he knew how I was feeling. He pulled me off. A crappy time of the game, too. We had a bit of a partial 5-on-3 and then a power play late in the second that if we had capitalized on that, it could have changed the game. So that's Connor McDavid's, you know, attitude, is that he's focused only on the game. He wasn't the least bit, you know, happy about getting pulled from the game. You mentioned Patrick Maroon's quote. Here's Patrick Maroon's quote. This is a man's game. People are going to get hit, get high-sticked. They're going to go through the middle and get hit. That's part of hockey, and that's why we have all this gear that protects us. Yes, if someone gets seriously hurt, we're concerned. But he just fell, got tripped. I don't get it. It's a man's game.
Yeah, but I think here, Sean, Patrick Maroon is missing the point.
Yeah.
This is about preventing concussions, or if they see a concussion, a potential concussion, mm-hmm. they want to pull the player off of the ice immediately. Now, again, this is a good thing. Is it foolproof? Absolutely not. Are they going to miss things? Probably. I mean, it's not perfect. So when you look at, you know, the protocols that have been put in place, they're following those protocols. They see Connor McDavid's head hit the ice. They pull him off of the ice. And I think, you know, for me, the Edmonton Oilers want Connor McDavid out there. In the heat of the moment, they want Connor McDavid out there because right now he's leading the league in points.
Sure.
So why are they upset? Because he's not on the ice and they need him to score goals and win and help them win the game, right? But, you know, for anybody to be upset that he's being pulled off the ice, in my opinion, is ludicrous, because this is exactly why the NHL has put this in place, is to prevent concussions. And like Bob McKenzie said in the audio that we played right before, if they didn't pull him off the ice, what would fans and media say?
And they find him concussed a day later.
That's what I was going to say.
I mean, remember, when Sidney Crosby had his concussion at the beginning of the season, it was on the most innocuous play imaginable. There was not a big hit, not a big impact.
People couldn't
even
really identify where it was for the longest time.
That's right. So, I mean, these things happen. So, I mean, I understand Connor McDavid being upset given the circumstances of the game. But at the same time, if I'm Connor, you know, if I'm Connor McDavid's parents, I'm like, okay, at least somebody, you know, for whatever reason, and I'll read Milan Lucic's quote before we go to break, because I think his quote is the best, you know. At least somebody is there sort of looking out for our son, even when he's not in the position to look out for himself.
Yeah, and if you're an owner of a team and you see Connor McDavid drop, his hands are by his side, you look at the way he falls, he's not bracing for impact. One hand's on his stick, the other is by his side. He makes direct chin-to-ice contact. You can 100% get a concussion that way. No doubt, mouth guard or not, you can get a concussion by your jaw smacking together. So wouldn't Connor McDavid rather... I know... it's an inopportune time with the power play and everything, but I think the NHL got this beyond correct, pulling potentially the league's best player, other than Sidney Crosby, off the ice in a power play where his team needs him the most, and says, all right, Connor, these are the rules that we have. You're sitting for until we've established that you are healthy enough to get out there. And wouldn't Connor McDavid feel a lot better missing 10 minutes than if he went back into that room and they did the eye test and they did the concussion test and they're like, sorry, Connor, you have to miss 10 games now because you have a concussion or something like that.
And Drew, just before you read the quote, I think Sean makes a lot of good points. You could say that the NHL, in many instances, is not tough enough on players, and players should get suspended.
Especially superstars.
Nazem Kadri on Daniel Sedin earlier in the season. We talked about it a month ago. I thought Nazem Kadri should have been suspended. But in this case, the NHL needs to be commended for doing their job.
For doing their job. Here's the quote from Milan Lucic, because I think really this does... I mean, yes, the NHL can be commended, but this is the real reason why they are doing this. Quote from Milan Lucic, it's all for liability reasons, right? At the end of the day, isn't it? That's the reason why the NFL has cracked down on it, and that's the reason why the NHL has cracked down on it. It's there to protect the player. You know, he's saying that, of course, that it's all because of the liability and the lawsuits and everything
else. Call it whatever you want. If the NHL is protecting their players, that's a good thing.
I don't disagree with either of you guys. I think in this instance, the Oilers are wrong, and the NHL does deserve kudos for the system in this instance. Because there's going to be plenty of other instances where it doesn't work. Actually, Jets head coach Paul Maurice was on a different radio station this week, and he was asked, this must have been Monday, so this happened Sunday night. He was asked if this has happened to his players, where guys have been pulled off and made to go to the quiet room. He said it happened to the Jets 4 times in one game. So it seems like it's happening throughout the league. Obviously, we're just not knowing about it. We don't know about it. In this instance, it became more public because, one, it's Connor McDavid, and because, two, there was a 5-on-3 power play situation at that point in time. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the Pittsburgh Penguins. Bill West from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review joins us. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Shortly past the bottom of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Shauna Soren Studio. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program Bill West. Bill covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Bill, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm curious, what's on the Illegal Curve sandwich?
Hang on, are you sitting down, Bill?
I am.
Okay, so you got 2 pieces of toasted city rye bread. Now, that's a local that's a local bakery here in town. And you have a piece of chicken schnitzel. You have some fried salami. You have cheddar cheese, you have fried onion, and you have honey mustard.
I'm good with everything except the onion. I'm not an onion guy, but the rest of it, yes.
Okay, well, when you guys come to Winnipeg, because you're coming, I believe, later this year. I think it's February you come to Winnipeg?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Illegal Curve sandwiches on us. How's that sound?
We can make that work. I'm okay with that plan.
But Bill, we'll make sure there's no onions.
Yeah,
we'll
hold the onion. I'll get double onions so that you don't have to have any. But we'll make it a date for you to try the Illegal Curve sandwich.
Sounds good.
Okay, Bill. Thanks for joining us this evening. We're talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins. Before we get into the Penguins, because you know they're sort of churning along well at the top of the Eastern Conference, or right up at the top of the Eastern Conference. Last segment, we were talking about Connor McDavid's removal from Sunday's Oilers Wild game by the concussion spotter. Obviously, in Pittsburgh, concussions, Sidney Crosby, they're go hand in hand. Unfortunately, was there any reaction in the Penguins dressing room to the concussion spotter pulling McDavid from the game? Did that make any impact, resonate at all with the Penguins players?
Not really. I think the Penguins are more sensitive, to the reality of concussions and the fickleness of them than maybe most teams. So if there's a reaction of any sort, it's that they probably support the protocol. You know, they're still hockey players. They don't want to come across as too soft or over cautious or anything. But they understand, like you said, Sidney Crosby's had several. Marc-Andre Fleury had two last year. Chris Letang has a history. So several of their big names have dealt with concussion troubles through the years, and they certainly respect the fact that concussions don't have to come from a big hit. You don't have to be leveled on the ice to suffer one. And you know, sometimes even the little hits that lead to concussions lead to very long concussions. And, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury last year, the concussion that kept him out of essentially the end of the regular season and for some of the playoffs, it was a shot to the face from James Neal. So, and it wasn't like he got, ran by some power forward that took off his head. It's a tough thing, for, the spotters. I think I don't envy them and their jobs, because obviously they do end up being kind of the bad guys in the eyes of some people. But, at least in the Penguins' eyes, it's probably not a bad protocol to have in place.
Bill, you just mentioned Marc-Andre Fleury, and the Pittsburgh Penguins are in second place in the Eastern Conference right now, only a couple of points behind the Montreal Canadiens. And, he struggled this year, and Matt Murray's numbers are certainly much better than Marc-Andre Fleury's. A lot of people are expecting Marc-Andre Fleury to be traded. Do you personally think that the Penguins move Marc-Andre Fleury before the trade deadline?
Yes. I sensed that all along, but I think my belief has gone even higher, or my expectation has gone even higher that they're going to move him, because, as you said, the plan that the Penguins tried to sell, to the media at the beginning of the season during training camp, was that they're in great position with both goalies. And that's still somewhat true. Marc-Andre Fleury, I would argue, is better than the average backup. But he hasn't handled this split role as well as really anyone at Hope. Even Jim Rutherford, the general manager, has come out at this point and kind of acknowledged that. So I think there's maybe a sense that the Penguins aren't benefiting as much as they thought they would, and certainly they want to get a return. If they're going to move a player like Fleury, they don't want to dump him off at the last second at the expansion draft or right before it, anything like that. So I certainly believe there's a better chance that he moves at the trade deadline now than I would have said, 4 weeks ago. Now, if Matt Murray gets hurt before the trade deadline, then I suppose my answer changes. But if they're both healthy and things continue the way they have over the past several weeks, I don't see a whole lot of need to keep Marc-Andre Fleury around as long as possible.
Bill, what are we talking about as far as an asking price for Marc-Andre Fleury? Are we talking about a first-round draft pick, a player, and a prospect? What would it take for a team, say Dallas, to get Marc-Andre Fleury from the Pittsburgh Penguins?
I certainly don't think it's that much of a haul. If the Penguins can get that, great. But I can't imagine, because goalies in general, they just don't command as much as certainly a top two, top four defenseman or kind of a top one or two center. And getting Fleury the way he's playing this year probably isn't helping the cause. So I think if they can get, I'd say maybe a second in a prospect, that might be more of a realistic thing. I wouldn't expect, anything too mind-blowing. And part of the trick, I suppose, if you want to call it that, is the Penguins, unless they have a ton of faith in their goalies at the AHL level right now, which both of those guys are essentially prospects, they probably need to trade for a goalie. So if they swap with Dallas, that's maybe not ideal because those two guys have bloated contracts. But I wonder if the Penguins are looking for a trade partner who could essentially give them a functional backup at a somewhat cheaper cost, and then get, obviously, the sweetener would be a prospect or a draft pick or something like that. But, I don't think it's going to be anything that will, make the average fan go, oh, wow. People in Pittsburgh are going to be disappointed by the return. I'll put it that way, because they think very highly of Marc-Andre Fleury.
Bill, I want to focus on the blue line. I want to ask you about Justin Schultz. He was kind of discarded out of Edmonton, and they kind of gave up on him out west, and he seems to have really found a comfort level with the Penguins here from an outside looking in. I'm curious your perspective on the blue liner entering his second season with the Penguins.
Yeah, I actually just wrote about him for tomorrow, and he has been surprising by, I think, anyone. Even within the organization, they'll say that. as you said, when they brought him in, he was something of an experiment or a work in progress. They figured the change of scenery would help. They certainly gave him a more manageable role, you know, a sheltered role, if you will. And he's really just flourished in on that third pairing and getting fewer minutes. He's becoming this very functional, I don't want to say specialist, but he's certainly talented enough that he can exploit some of these lesser matchups. You know, when he's out there against third and fourth line forwards and you know, bottom pair defensemen, he looks like this great player. So it's led to really strong point production and also, you know, promising shot metrics. He's just I kind of wonder if he's playing himself out of Pittsburgh at this point, because of course they gave him a 1 year contract that he'll be a restricted free agent at the end of the year, and he's probably going to command a decent price now because he's, again, putting up numbers that suggest he's pretty valuable and conceivably even a top four defenseman somewhere.
Bill West of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review is our guest on NHL This Week. Bill, you just answered about Justin Schultz. How is it possible that Olli Maatta, and we know he's had injury concerns in the last couple of years, how is it possible he's only got one assist in 26 games so far this year?
Well, he's had a rough go of it on a lot of levels. As you acknowledged, the assists aren't there, the goals aren't there. He's taking that pretty hard. He hasn't been happy with himself for a lot of reasons, but the lack of the raw points is a big one. Again, even just the shot metrics, the underlying numbers have not been very encouraging. He's had a tough time of it. You know, going back to last year, he had some rough stretches with the Penguins, and I think a lot of it is maybe just his skating. You acknowledge the injuries, and the Penguins have never come out and said, even Olli himself has not come out and blamed the injuries for his troubles of late. So I can't necessarily say that's the case. The thing that tends to jump out to me is he's not a great skater, especially compared to some of his teammates. And with the way the Penguins are playing, with that pace and that kind of aggressive style, he just struggles with transitioning from forward to backward and backward to forward. He gets caught flat-footed. So I think it's led him to play a very conservative style, which obviously hurts maybe more so on the offensive end than the defensive end. And, he's just to some extent a shell of the player, I think, that maybe people initially expected. He's still young, though. So I think that's the one thing you have to remember. As much as we want to praise Justin Schultz is also in his mid-20s. Olli Maatta is 22, I think, just turned 22 not long ago.
It's stunning that he's only 22. Seems like he's a grizzled veteran at this point. Bill West, our guest on NHL This Week. Bill covers the Penguins for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Bill, on the flip side to the Olli Maatta, question is, if you ask, say, 100, hockey fans, who's leading the Pittsburgh Penguins in points, 95% of them, I suspect, would say Sidney Crosby. Well, then you look at the stats, and Evgeny Malkin has got 28 points to Crosby's 27, and Phil Kessel has 27 points himself. Are Malkin and Kessel having some of the quietest, best seasons in the entire NHL?
Yeah, you could say that. I think they, to some extent, create that burden for themselves because they have been elite players for a while. So part of it is people look and go, you expect that from those guys. Crosby also missed the first several games, so he is producing at a higher rate than Kessel and Malkin, who have been healthy for everything. But yeah, Kessel and Malkin have been great on the power play. The power play has had its ups and downs, but those two are driving forces on it. And Phil Kessel is such a nice passer. When he first arrived in Pittsburgh, and I think around the NHL, the reputation of him has been that he's a sniper because of that wrist shot, and it is certainly a truly rare find in the way he rifles the puck. But his passing has stood out because he's on the team with all these other stars who are willing to shoot, and it's allowed him to show off some of his creativity as a facilitator. Malkin has always had that ability too, so when those two are out there together, if anything, maybe you see too much passing sometimes. There was a stretch early in the season. Neither of them were shooting as often as they had throughout their careers because I think they were deferring to one another. Mike Sullivan, the coach, came out and essentially told both of them they need to start shooting more, and you're starting to see that. But they're quiet only because, I guess they do have to deal with Sidney Crosby every day, and all else being equal, Sidney Crosby's marketability makes him the headline those days.
You know, Bill, we've talked about Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin and Phil Kessel. Every time I watch the Pittsburgh Penguins play, though, the guy I continue to be impressed with is Connor Sheary. He's small, undrafted. He had that big overtime winning goal in the 2016 Stanley Cup Finals. Is he underappreciated for what he does on that top line with Sidney Crosby?
Yeah, I think you could say that. You know, Pittsburgh fans certainly know who he is at this point. And the problem with any wingers of Sidney Crosby is there's always kind of this assumption that Crosby is the one making the magic happen, and you know, you could throw anyone out there and they would do fine, which of course isn't really true. It's not easy playing with the world's best player because you have to think the game as fast as he does. And I think that's one thing Sheary does really well. He has the hockey IQ to at least see what Sidney Crosby is trying to do. You know, Crosby had that bank shot goal, or actually it was kind of a put back on a bank shot the other night. Who the hell were they playing? I'm blanking on who they played. But, you know, another great Sidney Crosby goal kind of thing. And Sheary said when he passed the puck to Crosby, he didn't know what Crosby was trying to do at first, but, of course, quickly figured it out. But that's the challenge for any winger, is to learn to play the game at not just that physical speed, but that mental speed. And you know, Connor Sheary, probably better than most of the Penguins right now, is able to anticipate the next move. So, and he plays a game that is certainly agreeable and complementary of Crosby's style. You know, he likes to go north-south. He goes to the net, even though he's not a big guy. He uses his quickness to get in and out of puck battles. So he, you know, the skill set, it just functions well, I guess, on that top line.
Bill, I'm just looking at the NHL leaders in goal scoring, Sidney Crosby. No surprise there. He's tied with Patrick Laine of the Winnipeg Jets, the rookie. You know, every time Winnipeggers look at this list, they kind of just shake their head, can't really believe that Patrick Laine is putting up these numbers, tied with Sidney Crosby, 17 goals. I'm curious what the perspective is from your guys' side. You know, looking at the Winnipeg Jets and looking at this rookie tied with Sidney Crosby in goal scoring, how do you guys view that race so far?
Well, it's intriguing. You know, Crosby's scoring goals from probably closer than he ever has, certainly in recent years. So many of his goals have been, you know, either right in front of the net or kind of there at the extended goal line. Again, twice this year he scored banking it off the back of a goalie. So he's really shown his ability to score in tight spaces and, you know, with limited angles. And I think with Laine, every time you turn on the highlights, you know, you're seeing just that nasty shot of his. So stylistically, if anything, in Pittsburgh, it maybe harkens to you know, the debates we've heard for years about Crosby versus Ovechkin. I think people understand at this point that Ovechkin and Crosby are very different players, and you know, they serve different purposes on their team. I know the Ovechkin and Laine comparisons, of course, have come out. I've also seen people suggest that Laine is more of a sniper, not as much of a, you know, just shoot everything he sees kind of guy like Ovechkin. But, you know, thus far, the Laine highlights are a lot of, you know, from that left faceoff circle there, you know, kind of Ovechkin's office, at least on the power play. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if Laine, you know, kind of expands his range and where he likes to shoot from his sweet spot. And the same thing goes for Crosby, who, again, hasn't really had to score much, you know, from above the dot.
Bill West covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Bill, really appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll see you in Winnipeg. And as I said, I see sandwiches on us.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Bill. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Bill.
When we come back, we talk about Taylor Hall's body check on Philip Larson in the aftermath of that hit. You're listening to NHL This Week. One final segment to come on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
To me, what Taylor Hall does there is absolutely textbook. I mean, he comes in there. Now, first of all, you can see the path. He's gliding. He never accelerates. He doesn't launch up at all. His arms are in. He goes right through the body. And yes, it's a bad result. But Spezza throws the puck behind here. To your point, you know, Larson isn't aware of where Taylor Hall is coming there.
No laughing matter, the result of the Taylor Hall hit on Philip Larson last night. Larson, fortunately, glad to report he's out of hospital and he is hopefully on the road to recovery after the devastating blow leveled by Taylor Hall. This segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. If you're looking for New Year's Eve plans, maybe, you know, that's coming up only about, 3 weeks away, a little more than 3 weeks away. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, a great destination for your New Year's Eve celebrations. You guys have New Year's Eve plans?
Well, we're going to be at the Jets game against the Islanders.
Naturally.
Yeah, and then after that, I just assumed we were going to be hanging out.
I'm going to be in Kentucky.
That's going to be tough.
Yeah.
Well, you know what we could do? We could FaceTime.
I don't have an iPhone.
Uh-oh.
We could Skype.
I'm not sure my BlackBerry. That's right, BlackBerry.
I'll text you Happy New Year's.
I blocked your number.
Well, we did block each other on Twitter. We're not going to get into that right now. But
now you know what it feels like to be annoyed by you.
Okay, so we blocked each other, 4 days ago?
Sunday. You did Sunday's pre-post, right?
I think we can unblock each other now.
I'm good.
Water under the bridge. Come on.
There's no Kentucky trip.
The bridge has been washed out by a flood.
The best part is that on Twitter, so for people who don't follow us on Twitter, I said that the Minnesota Wild have 5 games in hand on the Jets, which they did. They had an active game.
To be honest, I misunderstood what your point was when you said that they have 5 games in hand. This is so
Drew was arguing because the Wild were playing that they only had 4 games in hand, even though they hadn't finished the game. And then I said,
it's a matter of interpretation.
And then I said I was going to block Drew, and then I went to go block Drew and saw that he had already blocked me.
The preemptive block.
Well, I mean, it just usually keep Ezzy as blocked because it's, he's annoying and all.
All I'm saying is,
hang on, when are the Ezzies? Aren't
the Ezzies
coming
are coming up in less than 2 weeks, Monday, December 19th.
Okay.
Hashtag the Ezzies.
Yeah.
And you have won Ezzies every single year.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just saying, if you want one, you better unblock me.
I might say that the block of the year went I'm eligible for the block of the year in the Ezzies this year.
Yeah, Sean wins every year, too.
Congratulations, Sean.
Thank you.
Yeah, it really must
My
be
mom
a
is
milestone.
Super proud. Yeah, both of them are on her fridge.
It's on the mantle.
It's one of her greatest achievements. And
instead of a Christmas tree, everybody's just going to gather around and stare at the Ezzies up on the mantelpiece.
Stare at their phones and read the results. Yeah.
It's the best / worst award show out there.
The first sign of the apocalypse this year is obviously Donald Trump winning the presidency. Mm-hmm. The second sign of the apocalypse comes every year when the Ezzies occur, when they end up trending in Canada.
Yeah.
That's always a problem.
Amazing.
It's always
amazing.
And the people, I didn't win an Ezzy this year. You know, they're the made up awards of a crazy person,
right? They're not made up.
They're completely made up.
They're real.
Hashtag it.
They're very real.
They're completely made up.
Okay, let's get to this hit. That was a clean hit. Okay. And, we talked about this on Saturday's show, Drew. Can you not lay a clean body check anymore? And we talked about this during the first hour. We talked about it with Ryan Kennedy as well. The fact that guys were jumping in, Michael Chaput, for guys that haven't seen the hit yet, Taylor, basically, the puck comes behind the net. This was last night.
Yeah,
the
Devils-Canucks game last
Devils night. And Canucks are playing in New Jersey. Luka Sabiza, a defenseman for the Vancouver Canucks, passes the puck back to Philip Larson, a 26-year-old defenseman for Vancouver. Uh-huh. He gets the puck and has his head down. Taylor Hall is coming at him behind the net, doesn't see Taylor Hall coming. Taylor Hall actually kind of stops up a little bit, and he's not known for being a physical player.
Has Taylor Hall ever laid a body check before?
He's also returning from injury.
He's returning from injury. He's not a guy that has ever had any type of history of dirty play. He hits Philip Larson. Philip Larson goes down in a very scary type of way. And again,
he's out cold before he hits the ice.
It kind of reminds you, actually, of the way Eric Lindros was hit, 15-plus years ago by Scott Stevens. Just doesn't see him coming. Has his head down. And it turns out that, Taylor Hall is not going to be suspended. There's not going to be any hearing. It's a clean hit.
It's a hard, heavy body check with a terrible result.
To me, and again, it turns out that Philip Larson is going to be okay. So for everyone
he's out of the hospital.
Right, Philip Larson is not.
He's
had a great
concussion and everything.
Sure.
But
he's not seriously injured, right, Drew? So I think to me, Sean, what's the most.
Not paralyzed, I guess. He's seriously injured. But
it looks like he's going to be okay, Drew. And Sean, to me, what's the most concerning here about this hit, I know we only have a few seconds here, but is that players, And you saw on the replay, Jacob Markstrom is kind of holding the players back because Marcus Granlund come and they jump in and they seem to have no regard for Philip Larson's health. To me, that was the most concerning. Have some respect for a guy who's laying there on the ice.
Force of habit is in the NHL nowadays is a big hit results in a fight and in a scrum. The problem in this instance was, you know, Hall lays the hit. Everybody goes to attack Hall. Philip Larson is lying unconscious as all these guys skate by and kick him in the head with their skates.
Like, how silly is that notion? You bull rush in to defend your player and kick him in the head skate as he's lying unconscious.
Yeah.
The MVP of that play goes to, Jack Markstrom, the goaltender, yep, and Granlund, who literally dove into the pile. You see Markstrom, he's on his hands and knees.
Like blocking.
One hand waving the trainer over, the other hand blocking four guys. He gets the Ezzy in my book.
Come on, man.
That's it for the Wednesday edition of NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Dave Maloney, Ryan Kennedy, and Bill West for joining us. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes and on our website, illegalcurve.com. You can follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to producer Rory, doing a great job behind the board. For Sean Assor and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday morning at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.